So we are in our new series, Marching Through the Gospel of John, and we come upon John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. This is one of my favorite stories in all of the Bible. It was read at my wedding and has been read at many weddings that I have presided at. And I always love reading this story and encountering it. That said, there's a caveat, and that caveat is this is one of the Bible stories that I think I understand the least. It's one that I really don't understand very much at all. There are many puzzling details that every time I read it, I think I've got it figured out, and then something new will appear to me, or someone will point out something that I had never considered before. But even on the face of it, if we don't spend a lot of time digging deeply, we see some puzzling details right from the get-go. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Why the third day? That must be important. Third day from what? Why are we talking about the third day? Verse 4 has caused lots of people to write all sorts of questions about what does Jesus mean when he says, does he say it rudely? Or is this just a convention we're not used to? Woman, what does this have to do with you and me? To his mother. I don't know about you, but if I talk like that to my mother when I was a child, there would have been some trouble in our household. And it seems like Jesus says, this doesn't have anything to do with me. My time has not yet come. So you expect that would be the end of the story. And yet he does the miracle anyway, which never made a whole lot of sense to me and still doesn't. Verse 9 is more confusing because the chief steward, the boss, as we said with the story with the children, the chief steward doesn't even realize that a miracle has happened. This miracle is unique in the Bible because almost all of it happens off stage. It's not really front and center. The chief steward has no idea that Jesus turned water into wine. The servants do. The disciples do. But if you were to have a video camera back then, and if you were to tape this, you couldn't record it on an iPhone or on a video camera because it happens off to the side in stone jars in the corner. And an overarching picture, it stands out as a miracle that really fits kind of awkwardly in with the other miracles. Jesus doesn't heal anybody in this miracle. He doesn't feed the hungry. He doesn't walk on water. He just does something that doesn't seem to be a big necessary thing to do. People run out of wine. You think you'd say, well, that's the end of the party. Deal with it. Let's get over it. But he does a miracle anyway. So there are all these questions that race through my mind every time I read this passage. And I found two keys this morning that help me understand this miracle, but I'm sure there are more questions that I will leave unanswered than I will actually answer. But the first key to the miracle seems to me the very first part of the verse 1. When John tells us that this happens on the third day, it's quite easy what he means there. If you just look to the previous chapter, chapter 1 of John, the context is what sets us up. On the first day that John starts telling his story, he tells us about John the Baptist testifying that Jesus is the Messiah. I, John the Baptist, am not. Jesus is the one you've been waiting for. That's day 1. Day 2 is a logical extension of day 1. Day 2 is Jesus gathering his disciples, Andrew, Simon, Philip, and Nathanael. They all come and see who this Messiah is. They're intrigued by the message. And they come and see, is this Jesus somebody who is worthy of being followed or not? And so, day 1 is about somebody pointing to Jesus as the Messiah. Day 2 is about the disciples coming and checking out if Jesus is the Messiah. So, day 3, in this way of looking at it, is also about becoming a disciple and looking and seeing if Jesus is the Messiah. And it seems to me that the key part of this passage is what Mary, Jesus' mother, says in verse 5 to the servants. She says, do whatever he tells you. And that is a fine definition of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. To do whatever he tells you. And when Jesus tells the servants to fill those stone containers up with water, they do it. And when Jesus tells us to forgive our neighbor 7 times 70 times, if we want to be a disciple, we will do it. When Jesus tells us to pray, don't pray like the hypocrites do and make sure that everybody says, oh, you're the best prayer everywhere, but pray like this, our Father who art in heaven. You do it. When Jesus says we are to love, not just our neighbors, because it's easy to love our neighbors. It's easy to love the people who live in the same house as us or the people who are next door to us. But then Jesus says, make sure you love people who are at arm's length from you. And he even calls us to love our enemies and to pray for those who persecute us. Do whatever he tells you. This story is just a continuation of the discipleship stories in chapter 1, day 1, and chapter 1, day 2. And this is day 3. It fits right in there with the other discipleship stories. That's the first key I have, that this is a discipleship story. And perhaps that's made true also with the very last verse of the passage, that Jesus' disciples put their faith in him. That this is the start of a new journey for the disciples. So the first key is that this is a discipleship story. The second key is that this miracle is about newness. And the reason it occurs off stage is because Jesus is bringing about something new. Something new is happening. We talk about Jesus being in the New Testament, right? Versus the Old Testament. And the reason that this occurs off stage is because Jesus didn't want followers who were wowed by miracle workers. There were plenty of people walking around Galilee who would, for a little bit of coin in their hand, would do a neat card trick. They would do something miraculous. They would say something miraculous. They would predict your future with remarkable accuracy. They would do all sorts of remarkable signs and wonders. But they weren't the Messiah. They would do things that looked good. But Jesus doesn't want people who follow him who think he looks good. He wants people to follow him because he is the Lord of their entire life. The Lord of their job, of their checkbook, of their savings account. The Lord of their personal relationships. The Lord over everything that we have and that we are. And to be a disciple of Jesus is to be remade new, is to taste the new wine. And discipleship opens up to a great joy of newness. Now, I don't think too many people in 2017 think about Christianity as mostly about joy. Mostly, I think if you pulled over a person on the street, including some Christians ourselves, would see Christianity as a series of rules. You and I, maybe we missed this, at least I did as a kid, but I know other people, this was their experience as a child. Well, if you're a Christian, you're not supposed to dance. And if you're a Christian, you're not supposed to wear makeup. And if you're a Christian, you're not supposed to play cards, especially not on Sunday. If you're a Christian who goes to this church, you're not supposed to marry a Christian who goes to that church, and especially don't marry a Roman Catholic. And you've hired a pastor who's married a Roman Catholic. If you're a Christian, you're not supposed to do this and you're not supposed to do that. And I know we think that, or at least I think, I'll speak for myself, I won't speak for you. I know that at least I think I'm beyond all that. I'm not like that. I'm not a rule follower. But sometimes I do click my tongue and make my own rules and think that I'm better than somebody else. And it doesn't bring you joy to judge somebody else, does it? It brings you pride, brings you self-satisfaction, brings you maybe a minor bit of happiness because you think, I'm not like them. But it doesn't bring you joy. It doesn't bring you newness. It doesn't bring you newness to look down on the person because they voted the wrong way or because they believe in the wrong God. It doesn't bring you great joy to see somebody who disagrees with you and then you say, well, they're just wrong and I'm just right. That's not joy. But Christianity is joy. Christianity is about newness and falling in love. And joy isn't really much of a rule follower. One of the people I read in delivering a sermon on the wedding at Cana compared this passage to falling in love. Compared newness to falling in love. And when you fall in love, when I fell in love with my wife, all of a sudden at the wedding, I didn't get a book this thick. And it said, here's your handbook for being in love. Here are all the rules that you will need. So on Thursday morning at 8:30, the correct answer is... correct answer is, why, yes, of course I will do that. Right? It's right here. No, you don't do that when you fall in love. Maybe it would help. I don't know. But in any event, you play it by ear. You sort of improvise. You do things not out of rule following, but out of love, out of trying to find a way through the world together. Not because somebody tells you you have to, but because of joy. Because of joy. And for too many of us, the Christian life is not about joy. For too many of us, we cling as hard as we can to the old. And I understand that. I get that. I do it myself. If only things were like they used to be, the good old days. But every time I find myself thinking that, I also think that God must have put us here. Me and you. On the last Sunday in August 2017, for a reason. That God didn't put us here to live in those good old days. Otherwise, we would have been put there. I would have been born back then. No, God put you here in this pew this morning. God put me here in this pulpit this morning, not for some different time, but for today. God wants you to be here. Did you ever think that God's wisdom is so great that He put you here just for this time and this moment? God put you on earth just for this challenge. Before you were even born, God placed you here just for this moment, just for this ministry, just for this ability to follow Jesus, to be one of His disciples. If God wanted you to be your age back in the good old days, He would have made it so. But instead, God sees something that you have that's totally appropriate, totally possible, totally loving for this year, for this month. So rather than get obsessed, and I know it's easy when you turn on the television, when you look at the headlines, rather than get upset with how wrong the times are, how everything seems to be spinning out of control, there's no question the times we live in are challenging. My proposal to you is look with joy at what God is doing new. Celebrate with joy that God has placed you on earth for this very moment. Look for the newness around you in life. Look for where Jesus is saying that there is joy and abundance, and we will never run out of the new wine, of the best wine. Follow the advice of Mary when she says, do whatever Jesus tells you to do, and you will be a joyful disciple. Today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, and forever. Amen.